That's improv, bitch. Improv, bitch.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Improv Nerd. I'm your host, Jimmy Corain. In the last 10 years, the New York improv scene has exploded, with such theaters and training centers like UCB, The Pit, and The Magnet. The New York scene now is rivaling Chicago. We were fortunate enough to sit down with Megan Gray, Rick Andrews, and Lewis Kornfeld from Magnet's Theater Touring Company. Listen as we discuss both cities' unique style of improvisation. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you.
And I just want to—I want to turn this over. I usually prepare, and I'm apologizing to you guys, but I'm also doing it because I don't want to feel shame. I've written my questions out, and they're now at home on the desk. So I had to go into what you guys were talking about, Carrot Top. That's how you warm up, I guess. I had to go and rewrite the questions that I remembered. So this truly is going to be improvisation. Let's start with Rick.
Oh.
Rick, you're the youngest member, right?
Like, I am.
And you were the youngest teacher, right?
Yes.
Ever hired at Magnet?
I believe.
Yeah.
I'm 25 now. I was 24 when I started teaching last year. So I don't know. We should go to the archivist for that.
Yeah. Great. Well,
that's true.
We don't have time, Rick, so we have to wait.
Right.
But you started when you were 12 years old.
Yes.
And I'm in Boston. And I'm curious what it was like as a 12-year-old, because they didn't have teen classes in those days. They just threw you with the adults. What was that like?
It was pretty crazy. I was taking classes with a friend of mine. We kind of stumbled upon the theater, and we went down and saw a show. I had watched, like, Whose Line Is It Anyway, the old British version.
Well, which was about short form.
Yeah, game. And so I knew improv through that, and we kind of went and saw a show and loved it, kept going back. And the AD kind of just threw us in. He was like, take a class, and threw us in. So it was me and another 12-year-old friend of mine. And I'm pretty sure we were extremely annoying to everybody.
What made you so annoying, you think, at 12?
Well, we're 12, you know. So,
right, that's the start.
Yeah, I think we weren't awful children. I think for children, we were pretty good. That would put us at, 15 or 16. You know, like, and so it's like, we were still, annoying. We were also probably terrible at improv. And so we would go out and get, snacks at the corner. And we'd without parent supervision, so we'd get, a two-liter Sprite, split between us. And, a huge bag of Lay's and just, lunch during class. And all those sorts of annoying behavior.
Where is he now?
He is a playwright in Chicago.
Oh.
Who is it?
It's my friend Mike Solomon.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then how do you... Because, from 12 till 25, you're still doing improv in your formative years. How do you think that shaped who you are today?
Everything, pretty much. I was a really impatient kid. I had horrible ADD.
Were you the kind of kid who bounced off the wall?
Yeah, I had to go see, I guess it's for ADD, and they would do those tests where they'd read you a story or show you a picture, and then you have to be like, okay, what do you remember about the thing? And so I was...
What did you remember about
nothing,
the thing?
Nothing.
Okay.
And
did they try to put you on Ritalin?
I was on Ritalin for 10 or 12 years.
Uh-huh.
I got Ritalin really, really early. And I think improv is... Who knows? But when I started doing improv, it forces you to be patient.
Uh-huh.
Pay attention. And learning that skill from improv was one of the things that helped me get myself off of the medication and actually learn to cope with okay, I have to... This is the real world. I have to pay attention to people. I have to focus in. Listen.
Were your parents just frustrated with you?
I don't know. They're too nice to ever tell me if they were. I'm sure they were.
I mean, were you kind of a pain in the ass as a kid?
Yeah, probably a little bit.
In what way?
I probably bugged the crap out of my little sister. I gave her a lot of crap. And I played a lot of hockey. I was really into hockey as a little kid, and I think I ate the amount of food that three kids would eat. So that was probably bad on the budget, and then I was off the walls, until I hit puberty, basically. I was, all over the place.
Now, Megan, your parents were, I found this very fascinating, they're both self-employed artists.
Yes.
And you guys lived, in Staten Island.
Yes.
And you lived, in an old farmhouse.
Yes.
And they were around all the time.
All the time, which I loved until I got to high school, and
okay.
I wanted
I wanted to have friends over and stuff.
Why,
like
was it kind of, were your parents like hippies, kind of?
I guess so, not really. Actually, they're not.
What were you embarrassed about, bringing people from high school over to your house?
I wasn't embarrassed. I just wanted to be with my friends.
Okay.
Without my parents there. My mom would always be offering food or drinks
like
or something.
Like hot brownies and stuff?
No. Okay. She's the exact opposite of that.
Oh, she's very square?
Yes. Okay. She's very square.
You don't think an artist is square?
No, she's very square. She's sort of like Marge Simpson a lot. Like, she's just very square doesn't... I mean, she smoked pot once, and okay. She tells that story, so...
What happened when she did?
It was at her grandmother's house, and her cousin had given it to her, and so she had it, and she's, it's not for me. That's just what she, that's not even what she sounds like, but that's what she was doing.
And what kind of art did she do?
She illustrated children's books.
Uh-huh.
So I guess maybe that's sort of, like, she was, my dad, I guess, was more of a hippie. He grew up in the 70s, like, he was around in the 70s, he was a lot older.
And what kind of art did he do?
He did graph, sort of like, he worked in advertising on Mad Men. He would do, like, the illustrations of, like, the ads and stuff. It was before computers, so everything was done by hand. Mm-hmm. And so he would just do ads all day. And then, so when I was born, my parents decided they didn't want to go to a job, an office anymore. So they made it so that they could work from home and go in every week to the city and deliver their projects.
And then I heard that your first class at UCB, level mm-hmm. one,
yes.
Your dad paid for you and two of your friends.
Yes.
What does that say about your dad? Was he scared to send you to Manhattan?
Oh, no, no. Okay. No. I was in college, uh-huh. So I was 21 years old. But my parents had always brought me to Manhattan since I was a little kid, so I knew I also went to NYU, so I was savvy.
Megan, I'm the one who's afraid of Manhattan.
Okay. But yeah, my dad wrote out a check, and I brought it down to the UCB and paid for my friend Lewis for him. Here and
we're still friends.
Yeah, we're still friends. We still talk. And my friend Corey Grimes, who's in Hello Laser, playing this week as well.
Were you guys dating back then?
We've been dating since high school.
Okay.
I was 15. Oh, you're 15 too. Mm-hmm.
So how did that come about? How did you feel when Megan said, okay, my dad's going to pay for us to take improv classes at UCB?
I don't remember that, and now I'm embarrassed.
It wasn't a gift.
No. Oh, sorry.
We talked about it beforehand.
Because at that time you couldn't afford it, or?
I didn't have a checking account until,
or a credit card.
I'm one of those guys. Yeah.
Okay. What about today?
I have a checking account.
Okay.
Yeah. One checking, because you have a savings account. All your money is like...
I don't know what I'm doing.
But there's a quality to you, Lewis, that is kind of like an old soul. Like you were, like, in a past life, you were probably in the 50s or something. You know?
Possibly.
Okay.
I've heard that before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense. I felt like an old man since I was a small child.
Okay.
I've always felt like an old man.
But you went to SUNY.
Yes.
And you were a film and theater guy.
Yes.
How did you discover improv?
I studied film in college, film production. And we were given one acting class that was mandated through the curriculum, and it was this teacher who kind of begrudgingly taught us actors, but sort of made it known that, like, the theater people don't have respect for film people who have no technique. And we weren't allowed to work with actors in the class because they considered that we would be corrupting the process because we didn't know what we were doing, which I thought was a catch-22, because until we work with them, we're not going to know how to talk with them. So that was that. So I wanted to learn how to talk to actors. That was my impetus for improvising. I didn't know anything about improv when Megan signed me up. I read...
Were you just going because you were dating her?
No.
I was just out of college, and I wasn't doing anything. I was working a couple of, like, odd electrician jobs on independent film sets, but I was really... My life was mostly sitting and waiting for her to get out of class. So I needed something to do. Yeah.
But we'd also been going to UCB since 1998, like that we were in high school.
I missed every one of those. I was working in Carvel, and every time
the ice cream store. Okay.
And every time they would go to see UCB, I happened to be working Carvel at that. So I missed. I'd only ever seen one improv show before I signed up for class. I saw Naked Babies at the old UCB on 22nd Street.
What was it like working Carvel?
it was not fun.
I don't see you moving very fast.
No,
is that true?
I'm not a fast mover.
Okay.
No.
I would be the guy behind the guy going, for God's sakes, it's just an ice cream cone. Can't you move faster?
Yeah. Well, I was attentive to people.
Okay.
I was very attentive and diligent. Soda jerk, whatever you call an ice cream person. So I was good at it. But the guys who I worked with, I still improvise with. We're all together.
So it was like that. That was the job that the improvisers got at Carvel.
No, we were all Carvel people first, and then long after
free ground.
Yeah,
because Megan and I both grew up together on Staten Island, and our two best friends growing up also started improvising with us, and we still work together to this day, performing Thursday night together.
Mm-hmm. Rick, there was something interesting that I read about you, that you read Harlequin books. Was this maybe this was a bit, and you put fake covers on it?
Yeah, that's. I think that's a bit.
Don't tell anyone.
We're very fortunate because you all three teach at Magnet. I'm surprised Armando and Ed Herbstman, Armando Diaz and Ed Herbstman, who run the theater, allowed you guys. Did you have to fly in separately? Because this is half. This is half the staff right here. If something happens to you while you're in Chicago, they're in a bad way.
Yeah.
And the rest of the staff is also here.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's a lot of it.
Yeah. We left, I think, one teacher behind in New York this weekend to cover all the classes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me a little about the Magnet. Now, when we think about New York style improv, we think of UCB style, very fast. Very game-orientated, writing on your feet. What does the Magnet do? What is different than the Magnet than, say, UCB or the Pitt, the other big institution there?
Well,
give it to the guy who worked at Carvel.
Yes. I think Magnet teaches, I want to say a slower approach,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it really is slow. You're taught to take your time a little bit more at the tops of scenes, and you're taught to trust your own patience and to not be tied down too conceptually. So I know, like, a lot of our training early on is about sort of teaching people to think physically and teaching people to think in terms of pictures on stage and to avoid really complicated premises or anything too gamey, to kind of allow the game to grow a little bit more out of me. So I think you kind of take a slightly more intuitive approach. UCB is a little more left brain, I think.
Mm-hmm. And UCB is more, because you studied there,
mm-hmm.
it's more get the premise out right on the first line, right?
A little bit more of a, I don't want to say a formula, but it's sort of like, as Lou said, left brain, like finding the game and then just hitting it three times and then you're out.
And I think UCB's approach lends itself to a style of improv where the goal is to improvise scenes that can very easily be transcribed into sketches and that work with the same kind of mechanics, you know, as a sketch. And Magnet, we sort of shy away from that a little bit and focus a little bit more on just the behavior behind things. Behavior is a big catchword that we picked up from Armando quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on behavior.
It comes down to like impact too. That's like a lot of big things stress in class. And like you say like, oh, slower kind of, like they're definitely groups. Like Lewis's group, the boss, is a slow comedy team. Like they like things develop at a patient pace. But there's also a team to play like a fast group person plays pretty quickly. And group like track will play very fast. But there's like a sense of like letting everything matter, letting what just happened matter to you. Who are you? What's your behavior? What's their behavior? Letting it impact you before you go to the next thing. You know, it's like not BSing it, like genuinely being affected by what's going on in the scene as a way to get to that higher order stuff of like pattern and game. You know, because you kind of get a pattern in the game, but there's no believability, there's no behavior, there's no impact. intact with the characters. It's kind of just like the pattern without any heart to it. But you see people, you see characters, you see behavior, and from that grows organically. Having a game, you're putting something with the fun. You're adding weight to it. You're giving it some reason to matter to you. So you're laughing, but you're also it sticks with you a little bit. Hopefully, you know.
What is the community like there? I mean, I only hear the gossip. I only hear third party information. What is the relationship with the Magnet, UCB, the Pit?
Magnet's the smallest. We're a little bit more of a closer... Just because we're smaller, everyone kind of knows each other. Mm-hmm. And then kind of goes out from there, the Pit, and then UCB. But, the community in New York has exploded in just the past 10 years. As we were talking about earlier, you don't have to explain improv anymore to someone. Almost everyone has taken a class or knows someone who's taken a class. So it's just exploded.
And we were also talking earlier before here in Chicago, and it took a while for this to happen. Now people will take it multiple places. I.O., Annoyance, Second City. Some even will be taking all three at the same time. Mm-hmm. Does that happen in New York? Do people take it all multiple places and get to perform it all multiple places?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You'll see people who will, like most students who I have, will take classes eventually at other places and they'll kind of try it out. And I encourage people to do that.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the things that I felt lucky having, like, coming up with the improv I got to experience was, in Boston, and I was in St. Louis for a while, and Easy Access in Chicago. Got to travel a lot, see other groups. It's like the more different kinds of ideas you get into your head, I think the better it is. It helps you identify what you like, what you want to do, what your own voice is. It doesn't matter who you're studying with, you're just hearing one voice over and over again. It can be hard to really grow to that next level, I think. So there's like that second generation of improvisers who've kind of come to the scene after it's exploded a little bit. I think people, when I moved to New York, it was only like 2.5 years ago, there was this reputation that it was going to be cutthroat and people were going to be, very territorial. And I actually
I heard. That was the rumor that we heard.
I didn't really experience that. I got here, I took classes at all the places, and almost everyone I met in my classes was warm and wanted to get to know you and liked playing with other people and didn't really care where you laid your head at the end of the day. I have friends now from all the places that are in house teams at all the theaters and teach at all the theaters, and there's definitely not that, we can't. Associate.
Well, I think it's also now that it's exploded, we also have the mixers and jams and things that are free to play and free to watch, and anyone from any theater can come. We have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday. We have four times a week that you can go and improvise, and that's open to anyone, and all the other theaters have them as well. So now there's also this kind of revolving door of just anyone can come and play, and everyone's just trying to get stage time everywhere. So now you can do that very easily and just, skip around to all the theaters every night. It's great.
And they're all, the Pit just moves, so they're a little further away, but the theaters are so close. We used to be in Magnet, three, four blocks away. The Pit used to be a block away from Magnet, now it's a 10-minute walk. But you really can, go catch a show over there, pop up, catch up Magnet, go over, catch a show Pit.
And all the rehearsal spaces are also all in that area. So you can go to rehearsal, show, and then another show. Access is incredibly easy.
It's like a college campus, because you walk from rehearsal space to rehearsal space, and all week long you just keep on seeing the same faces everywhere. It used to be a lot more territorial when we started.
It was like games, wasn't it?
I don't think it was as bad as it was here.
Okay.
But it was definitely, there's a lot of flag waving.
When we started, that was, I would say a couple months in was when...
And when did you start? It was 2003?
2003,
that's right, okay. Yeah. And so the Pit had kind of just started.
And the Pit had left UCB. Armando Diaz, who was in the Magnet, mm-hmm. and Ali Farinakian started it because they weren't happy, I would imagine, what was going on in UCB.
Split off. So we kind of were there to see at the beginning of that kind of, we didn't know enough to call any sides, but we saw that sort of territorial thing happening. And then Armando split off from Ali in the Pit, and then he was selling, he had classes really, really cheap, so that's when we started taking Armando's classes, and then so we were just with him when he started Magnet.
And there were some hurt feelings at the time, for sure, and there were definitely people involved in the scene who kind of were defensive about it. I mean, that was our first sort of experience when we started to be aware of the goings-on behind everything. But that's cooled down considerably in the last 3 or 4 years.
How did you end up at the Magnet? Because you could have been at UCB. You could have done the Pit, you guys. Why did you pick the Magnet as your home?
Armando.
Yeah.
And what makes, I mean, I've known Armando for, I don't know, 25 years. What makes him such a charismatic figure?
The ideals and ethos that we bring to the stage about, like, supporting, like, openness and, like, warmth and community, like, he genuinely believes that stuff. Like, it's not it's not a tagline. Like, and he wants to build that. And, like, I ended up, like, staying in Magnet, because it seemed like the place where I could put up any kind of work. It didn't matter what style it was. It didn't matter where it was coming from. If it was good, I could find a home there. And I really like that. It's really welcoming, like, to anyone who wanted to come and just get better. It didn't matter, if you were a superstar or if you were doing your first class. Like, you were pretty much treated with the same kind of respect. And, I think that's important. I think everyone gets better in that situation, not just the new people. Like, I think when you're forced to do these mixers that we do, and you're playing, you're doing scenes with people you've never come before, like, you got to check where you go at the door. You got to, like, really...
Why do I hear mixers? I think, and maybe because you guys are younger and I want to vicariously live through you, that people are hooking up and doing a lot of drugs.
That does happen, but science can't bet that happens because people.
Now, I brought this up, we had Matt Walsh on, and he's my generation. I say pot is the new drug in the improv community, certainly in Chicago. Do you think that's true in New York?
Not for me.
Okay.
I can't smoke and perform.
Okay.
People do it. It's definitely...
There are some shows that revolve around that, yeah, where they tell everyone they're high for that show.
Uh-huh.
But I don't...
The crowds I work with, beer is still the king.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that Angel does pays everyone. That'd be really exciting at least to watch.
You break every bone in your hand.
Yeah.
Now, Megan, you were just the artistic director.
Yes.
They just appointed you. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. November, thank you.
Tell me how hard of a job that is. Because you're dealing with egos, you're dealing with personalities, you're dealing with, why was I taken off this team? Why aren't I being put on a team?
Yeah.
How hard of a job is this?
It's pretty hard. Well, luckily, Lewis manages the house teams. He's the director of, we call it Megawatt.
That's almost like it's almost like a mom and pop organization.
Yeah.
Lewis does that. Yeah.
Sort of, yeah. So luckily he has to take care of that. It's really difficult, sort of, because you can't judge an improv show off of one night. So it's sort of like, do you give this group time to breathe? Do you give them another run? Do you take them off, tell them to go back to rehearsals for a while? So that's really hard to judge, of knowing people and knowing what's the trajectory of this show. Is it going to get better? Is it going to get worse? Are people even going to come see it? It sounds good on paper. Is it going to be good on stage? Kind of also figure out the vibe of the night and you want people to stay. Like, is this going to work, the flow?
Has anyone ever threatened you? Either one of you? Or got really upset?
Yes,
crazy?
Upset, yes.
What happened? What's the worst thing somebody ever...
Use as many names as possible.
You have names, but...
Well, it's just like people sometimes just, they get up... They take it very personally.
Uh-huh.
That's another thing about being at the theater is that, like... And we're also so small, is that we'll get texts or G-chats at, like, 2 a.m., asking a question about their team or their show, or like, can you coach? And like, there's no boundaries, really. As soon as I get my emails down to zero, I get like 20 new emails. I probably get about 100 emails a day, and that I have to send and write and everything, and scheduling. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Lewis, what do you come against up against when you?
I was called a piece of shit the first week I took over the job.
Really?
They told me that I was a piece of shit.
What happened? Why are they reacting to what?
It was just nothing. I hadn't done anything yet.
Okay.
I had literally just been announced as taking over of running the show.
And that was their way of, yeah.
They were just pissed.
You don't deserve it. You're a piece of shit.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the basic idea. I just had a guy actually 2 days ago sit down with me to give me his input about how things are going and give me advice.
That's nice. What is he in, like, level one?
No, no, he's...
Lewis, come here.
He's been around. He's been around. But what I thought was funny was he opened up by saying how much he loves watching me perform and how much he loves my team. And then 5 minutes later, one of his suggestions was that I cut my own team to make room for his group. And I realized he had never seen my team. He had started off with this compliment, but had never bothered to look up who I performed. So his advice to me was cut my team. Because my team's not cutting it. I thought that was amusing. He hasn't seen us play.
Yeah.
He doesn't know. I get it. For me, a lot of the same of what Megan was saying. Trying to balance how much time do you give people? How much support do you give? How much do you kind of hang back and sort of have them sort of make this process of being on a team their own and discover for themselves sort of how to behave? To what extent do you step in with those conflicts on a team? To what extent do you sort of step out and leave it be? And that is sort of what I juggle a lot of. And I get a lot of hurt feelings. I get a lot of late night phone calls of people who want to sit and talk and go through.
How long do you stay on the phone with them?
I don't do phones, so I say meet me tomorrow. But usually I'll talk with them for about an hour, hour and a half.
Do you ever get this, Rick, when you teach, someone will pull you aside and say, what do I need to work on?
Yeah.
Well, how do you deal with that?
You know, in level one, I've discovered I tend not to really tell them much things.
Why? Why do you say?
Well, because I think we have, there's a way to teach where we kind of fill people up with facts and information and things to remember and not to do, or to definitely do. And I think when you're first starting out, that can really kill your ability to just speak, to create. To feel free, you know, and that's the tricky part of the level one class. Like, you can note everything, but I kind of think of my job as like they need to walk away from a class thinking that improv is the most fun thing ever, so they keep doing improv. And part of that is getting that individual feedback. But it's like, if it's so regimented, if it's like you do this, you do that, you do this weird thing with your body, you don't initiate scenes like this, like that's all they're going to think about, you know, because at that point they've done like 10 hours of improv, you know what I mean? And then they, you know, so I try to, you know, just get people to that place where they can feel comfy, because that stuff's going to come. You know, it's a long journey. It's not like, well, you have 6 months to get great, or then you're done. You know, it's like if it's something that you love, it takes time, and anyone who puts time into it gets better. So I try to keep it on that path as much as possible.
So we're going to get comfy, and researching a little of your work. All of you guys are very supportive, all three of you. I'm very supportive. So I'm like, what kind of show are we going to have? You know, I'm more of a follower. I have the hardest time initiating. And I've been doing this for who knows how long. But and getting the research on you guys, that's kind of, you guys are really, really good support players. So we have four very good support players. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of show we have.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Are we ready to do some improvisation?
Let's do it.
Okay, great. All right.
Furniture, I have nothing here, okay?
You got a great firm.
It's not mine. It's Carol's. She's going to pick it up.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
Don't you have some sort of snide comments?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I would normally say in any kind of breakup, take the plant first. Don't leave the living thing as the last one to stay there.
You know, I got to say, this is really uncomfortable. Like, at work, I'm comfortable with you, but in my house, I'm like, this is just uncomfortable.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I'm uncomfortable as hell, too. I think that's why I come across like this. I don't like being in other people's spaces.
Is that why you never went out with us after work?
Yeah, of course.
You never went to the Christmas party?
No.
I was thought it was because you didn't like me.
No, you're fine. What the fuck am I going to talk about at a Christmas party? Christmas?
See, that's when you never got that moment.
Wow.
That's where you're still in the middle.
I can't be someone who I'm not.
You know, you say that. That is your answer for everything.
I think it's a pretty good answer.
But you've been in the mailroom now since you got out of college. It's been like 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's been 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, usually about 5 years, people are knocking down my door, you know, trying to get something, you know. So, it's been 2 years since that, and I've been waiting for it. What can we do for you? Are you happy here?
Yeah, I'm fine. I think I've made the mailroom my own
space. When you say that, do you know what it sounds like? Say that sentence again.
I'm fine.
Yeah, do you know what that sounds like?
No.
It's not terrible.
Really?
Yeah, it sounds like you just said, fuck you. That's what it sounds like.
Really? That's how I come across?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it's like one of those things where, like, when you smell your own fart, it's not so bad.
Oh, hello.
Ah. Should I come up here?
Yes, I was hoping someone would come up. Well, my exhibit is this way. This is the opening.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. I've created this. You can walk around it.
I'm not much into art.
Oh.
I just came here to pick up some single women.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
I see you don't have a wedding ring.
I do not. I do not.
You're flirting with me, aren't you?
I am. I have a flirtatious personality.
Yeah.
I'm told.
Yeah. My name is.
You can tell me.
I'm going to tell you.
I don't need a car to remember.
Okay. My name is Bob.
Oh, Bob. I'll remember that. I am Shanae.
Hi, Shanae.
Hello.
I love what you've done.
Oh, thank you. That's my nephew.
Really?
Hi.
I put him in this position, so this is my work.
Auntie, how much longer?
Just tell it already. You're doing great. Don't tell your mother. So, let's keep flirting, huh?
So I have a great Italian restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Not near me,
either. You're to my...
It feels like a three-way.
Oh, no.
No, I didn't mean that. I just said that to impress you. Like,
you do them all the time.
Yes, exactly, because I don't.
Oh,
no.
You don't?
No.
You've never three-wayed?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you must try.
Really, you've done it?
Yes,
oh.
Many times.
What's a three-way?
This is gallery talk. Anyway,
yeah.
They're amazing. Uh-huh. I would say, I'm more of a two girls, one man situation.
Wouldn't that be four?
I'm one of the women.
Oh.
No, my God.
This guy.
Yeah, it was that.
Wow. That's
yeah.
Cool.
funny. Oh, you know what? Yeah. Let's hear the next one.
Okay. Well, yeah. this is a real funny one. You guys are going to really enjoy
it. Oh, boy. Right. Who wants another beer?
I always, I'll take it a light.
Yeah, I got a light.
I'll take a light. Okay. I got to watch the old stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll take a real beer.
Okay, great.
Yeah. I'll also take a light beer.
Great. How about some angel dust?
Is that a new beer or is that what you're
No, come on, you guys.
Carl.
Yeah, angel dust. You know it's a drug.
Yeah, man, PCP. Yeah.
I've been reading it on the internet.
You know what? If we're going to do angel dust, I'll take a regular bud, too.
Okay.
I'm into this.
Yeah, what the hell?
Okay.
And Mark, when I say how much I appreciate you researching your drugs before indulging, I mean,
I just want to be popular.
You are with that attitude.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's
get
the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait.
Mark. Yes. Mark is back. That is a lot.
That's
a good amount.
Well, it's frozen.
Oh yeah.
Just like it said on the internet.
That's
It is supposed to give you a buzz that lasts for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Buzz is that's an interesting word to associate with
buzz.
Yeah.
Well, let's let it thaw out a little bit.
Yeah, you can't do cold angel dust.
No.
No. You're supposed to be like a
headache.
Yeah.
It'll kill you.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was at the boardwalk at the Jersey Shore with who do I see but can't see Kasem.
He's rad.
Do you ever met him?
No, but I know he's rad.
Alright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm down with that.
Great.
Yeah.
Anyway. My story's been interrupted. Flows over.
I'm going to use the bathroom.
Good idea.
I'm going to come in the bathroom with you.
I'm going to bring my coat and my bag as well. So, I'll just go in the bathroom.
You could use this bathroom right over here. You don't have to go upstairs.
Oh.
Just right here, yeah.
Okay. Leave my coat and my bag then.
Yeah, leave your coat and bag right there.
Anyone else want to go to the bathroom?
I did before. The moment has passed.
Okay.
For me.
Okay,
yeah. I'll stay here.
Okay.
Good luck.
Yeah. See you guys.
Yep. Let's play a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
It's
great.
Called Who Can Do the Most Angel Dust. You're gonna go first. And at that point, we'll see how the game progresses.
Good idea.
Great idea. I love that game.
Yeah. Awesome. Great.
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. Angel dust.
Great. All right. How do I do it? What kind? Do I smoke it? Do I snort it? I'm totally game for this.
You can probably put those dust cubes in some drink or something.
Drink. Sure. I get a glass.
Well, that's great. So it'll dissolve into your drink. All right.
Here we go. Got 4, 2. Just chop a little.
Hey, you might hold your Bowie knife while you're doing this. Is that cool?
Sure.
Go ahead. I flip that
for you.
Hey, cheers.
To my best friends.
Two guys that we know.
Yep.
We'll talk when we get back from camp, right? We can still be friends outside of camp, right?
That's what I'm pointing out.
Great. It's been a great summer.
Yeah. Yeah, sure has. It was really funny when you fell out of the canoe.
Oh, you're so wet. it was really great, that song you sang at the talent show.
Oh. I was so stupid.
Miley Cyrus, though.
Yeah. I just changed a couple of lyrics, you know, to make it funny like that.
Yeah.
Very good. Hey, guess is a freak. Come on.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
What's your name?
Nothing, sir.
You go to this camp?
I went to this camp.
Yeah, keep it that way.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. don't even think about what that means.
Okay.
That's my stepdad.
Yeah.
He's terrible.
Yeah, I can tell. No man who behaved like that could be a girl's natural father.
All right, well.
Well?
I'll call you.
Yeah. Please, you have my number?
Yes, I do.
Let's hug and say goodbye.
Let's hug and say goodbye.
Maggie!
Yes?
This isn't free, Maggie. Come on.
You know what, sir? Maybe you should just let her have a moment or two. Boy, you're even taller. I mean, you're tall, far away, but up close. You're
7 foot one.
Big. Wow. Basketball player? Can you follow the game?
No.
Okay. No, games. Got it. Got it? Yeah. Well,
I'm too busy raising this illegitimate child of mine.
Yeah.
When I see all the illegitimate, I mean, she's not my actual daughter.
Got it.
Not in the illegitimate sense, like she was had out of wedlock.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think so.
Great.
Yeah.
She could dress in clear silk or something.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm coming.
Take your penny off and I'll let you go. It's getting dark.
Can toss that in the laundry. Bye.
Bye. Wait a minute. Take my ticket to the concert.
The concert?
Mm-hmm.
But you were excited about this for weeks.
Yeah. I'm more excited now that I know that you'll be joining.
Okay. I can't wait to see that band.
Yeah.
All right, so when I get there, all I gotta do is scoop the ice cream. Is that it? Is that easy?
It's pretty simple.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes you gotta dip the scoop or into some warm water, like especially if they're doing like maple walnut or something.
Okay.
No one's had that for a long time, so that tends to get real hard. In fact, I tell everyone it's to avoid maple walnut. Okay.
Okay.
So the classic strawberry, okay. Coffee. Banana, if you want to do that. I don't know why you would, but go for it.
What if I want an ice cream cake? I don't think I'm ready for an ice cream cake.
This ice cream cake is really simple. You know how to write the script. You can write a piece of paper. And you can do an ice cream cake. That's fine. You know what? Just practice. You know, just practice a little bit when you get there. Take out a napkin.
Okay, so I
got
a couple of things I want. Okay. First, what do you recommend?
Probably the coffee ice cream.
Coffee?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, okay, so give me 2 brown bonnets. I want a fudgy the whale cake. And I want to have a sonnet written on it. Please do that. I don't have the sonnet with me, so I'm going to speak it out loud. And you can just write it down. I also...
I wonder what kind of ice cream I had. Friend's house wasn't labeled. It's kind of open, maybe you know what I'm talking about. It's brown. You guys got any of that stuff?
Okay. Yeah, chocolate. Is it chocolate?
No.
Brown. Was it brown all the way through or just on the top?
You know what? I only saw the bit that went in my mouth, so
you'll be able to take more deductions.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, because isn't...
Phil, you remember how you owe me really bad?
Yeah.
You know that client Lisa?
Sorry, Lisa. Yes.
I have got the hots for her so bad.
So I need you to separate her husband some kind of way. Just make some up. Finances, accounting, something like that.
Hey, Phil, what the hell, man? Your bookie showed up at our house at 3 a.m. last night and tried to forcibly grab my wife.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are separated, right?
Financially separated.
Well, I mean, I understand that, but I had to do the paperwork. To be financial, you also have to be legal. I didn't explain that, and now I'm being clear.
He carried me out of the house and said I was owed to him.
Yeah.
When I tried to tell him to put her down, he rubbed a grapefruit in my face.
Did you like it?
No!
Okay, some people are turned out. Okay, Phil! What?
What kind of sick nightlife are you leading?
Sit down.
Every time you sit down.
Sorry, yeah.
Okay, it's about me this time.
Okay.
I have a drug problem.
Yeah. We figured that out.
Great. and I've been using the money to buy more drugs. Not only for me, but for other people. Because I want to be liked.
There's nothing worse than a druggie who wants to be liked.
That's part of
it. Well, I mean, I guess I can hook up with that bookie.
Yeah, that's a yes. That's a yes. Thank you for the intercom, by the way. I appreciate that.
That's so dumb.
I keep that on.
Very fun.
All right. Well, I guess if that's going to solve it.
Awesome. The angel dust is going to drop out this afternoon. Thanks, buddy.
Great. I appreciate it.
Come on, let's go. You're owed to me. Let's go.
You know what, Phil? Your desire to be liked by everyone? I don't like you a hell of a lot right now.
Sit down.
No.
Oh, gosh. I love Christmas.
I do, too.
I love it.
Come on.
Gosh. Let's talk about Christmas,
I love Christmas.
I love
Oh, there you are, Billy. How are you? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Your mother's making some eggnog for all of us.
Top five things about Christmas. Go.
Presents, family,
presents,
eggnog, Santa.
That's why I love her. That's why I love her. Martha? All right. Tinsel? I love tinsel. The baby Jesus in the manger. All right, that's and then the three wise men. There's my five.
Oh,
right
there.
All right, I like that big tree.
Uh-huh.
All right,
Tyler.
Yeah, I like the family that I have.
Yes, us.
Yeah,
us right here. Sure.
And I like the top of the tree. It's a different part of the tree now.
It's more narrow.
Yeah, I like the day after Christmas when you just feel kind of hollow, but in a fun way, you know.
The letdown, the disappointment.
Oh, disappointment.
We know that, don't we?
And the day before Christmas when you're so
excited. Oh, it's Christmas Eve.
That's what it's called, yeah.
Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
All right, buddy, your turn.
You took most of the good ones.
Don't be such a Scrooge.
Okay, I guess I like Christmas lights.
Yeah.
Christmas, I'm sure, that little sparkly thing. Sure.
Uh-huh. The Yuletide log on Channel 11.
Oh, yeah. Oh yes, thing that plays all night.
That light, yeah. I like it because it's such a waste of air time.
Yeah.
There's
tons more.
Yes, there are. Unless you're a pagan. Who wants a little more?
Miracle on 34th Street. That's
which one? That's two. There's one with Sebastian Cabot, who will play Mr. French, and Family Affair, and then there's the original one.
Well,
the black and white version.
Of course I'm talking about the Sebastian Cabot
version. I'll give you 2.5 then. Oh, I'm funny.
Okay. 2.5 more.
You're still 3 more hours.
Thank you, my dear.
Thank you.
All right. Tyler, here you go. Another brandy.
Oh, you know what I like the round red cloth that you put under the
skirt. It's called a skirt.
A skirt.
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 Very like feminine.
Very, yeah.
Those trees are feminine, that's why they wear a skirt.
All right, you know what, Dad? Here it is. I knew it was coming. This is why I didn't want to come this year. Feminine.
Feminine. Yes.
D deal with me, Dad.
Your gayness, is that what you're bringing up? I'm Christmas?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
That doesn't count as one of them. Gayness does not count as one of my things.
I didn't mention it as one of my favorites.
Well, now we're all talking about it, so.
You're the one who started it. No one has a problem with your gayness.
You had three M's at the end of that word. Problem three M's.
It's a big problem.
Yeah.
Will everyone stop fighting?
If you want to date a, or go around with a man, I don't have a problem. Just not on Christmas. I don't want you to bring it up on Christmas.
Christmas.
Just don't be gay on Christmas.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you. Thank you.
Easy.
Listen to your brother.
Just don't be gay.
Yes. It's not
today,
that
hard. Tomorrow, do whatever you want.
Yes. When you're going back to college.
How about you don't be a Pisces on Christmas? How about that? Try that.
Sure.
Oh, for God's sakes, that makes no sense.
It's perfect sense.
He doesn't have a choice.
Listen to what you just said.
I'm a Pisces because I was born that way.
Yes. Good job, you guys.
Oh, great job, you.
How'd you feel about that?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. I got to make you do angel dust. That was good. That was
yeah,
good.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, definitely.
How do you do angel dust?
I couldn't tell you.
I couldn't.
I think you probably injected or snorted.
Yeah.
That's just based on other drugs.
No,
I probably should have gone and just started to smoke it versus like, because I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I should have just gone and to make it more active. There was a little stalling there. And then I felt when we were doing the flirting scene, I got lost a little. You know, like, you were flirting. How do I heighten the flirting?
Oh, yeah. I guess I could have heightened it. I was the expert flirter in that scene, so.
But I mean, I think it was basically a seduction scene.
Mm-hmm.
I think I needed to go more with that.
Oh.
To heighten that, yeah.
Oh yeah, I guess so. Yeah, or I mean, some more art, crazy art pieces could have come out. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was picturing that gallery was above a garage or something. I thought it was very not really a gallery. This woman's seduction castle.
There was a thing in the Village in New York for a while. People would convert their apartments into private galleries, so you could
yeah.
get $2.50 to walk up and view their gallery, and then they would collect after the month and pay their rent.
Yeah.
Is it relevant?
Yeah.
What scenes did you like that we think we nailed?
Oh, I thought the first scene was very good.
Uh-huh. I enjoyed playing that scene.
I did too.
Yeah.
I like that everyone was misinterpreting what Lewis was saying. Like, Lewis wasn't, like, everyone was like, well, you sound like a dick right now, or that's, I thought that was amusing.
It was making me paranoid.
Yeah.
It was really great.
Rick, what do you think worked in this?
The Christmas party scene was fun too. It's fun to find that pattern and find emotion out of that pattern too. Like, I love seeing that stuff interact, the emotion, the behavior, and like get back to, like, we're talking about that flirting scene. It's like you're saying, like, oh, if there's more crazy artwork. It's like, sometimes it is just that simple. Like, well, we see artwork and then you flirt. Or it's like, well, how do we flirt more? Well, let's see more artwork, you know.
Yeah.
And then we'll remember. Oh yeah, we flirt. Super hard when we see art, someone's niece like posting
yeah, yeah.
something or whatever.
Well, I thought, you know, the Christmas scene was really fun. For me, it was
yeah.
like I had a character, so I had something to drive. But at the beginning, when you said, oh, five things for Christmas, I thought, oh, my God, this what a easy or a cheap choice. And then just basically because we agreed and we all committed to it, it became really fun. And those are the kind of scenes that I, as a performer, I resist. And it's my stuff. I'll own it. But those are things. Those scenes are so simple if you just agree, mm-hmm. you know, and not judge it.
Yeah, it seemed like we were coming out of that conversation that was like, yeah, they were just like standing around talking about Christmas.
Yeah.
You know? Like it was like that's why like yeah, it's like okay, like what's fun about that? Well, it just you just wouldn't do it. You just wouldn't stand around and talk about the holiday with parties. And
yeah.
Parties.
Right.
Like, let's do that. Let's just sit here and talk about.
Yeah,
you know, as boring
which,
as possible.
Which loses character, yeah, brought up
yeah.
in the first scene, seeing her talking about Christmas,
yeah.
which I thought was...
And I thought you made a great choice about taking it personal about the skirt underneath the tree, and I probably could have, I would have liked to given you more emotionally to play against.
What was that? Was that your thinking when you said that?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, that was a great surprise.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I thought that you were...
Telegraph?
I thought that
it was a loaded...
No, but I think it was great that you took it that way.
It gave me my first clue of what to do. Because I'll tell you what I was thinking in that scene was, oh, fuck. I forgot to have a character. Everyone else is playing the same similar attitude. I didn't do that. I walked in as myself again, which is a pretty common thought in my head. I just walked in as myself again. You were saying it was good for you to have a character. Do you find that you resist making that move at the top of scenes? Will you give yourself different voices and different characteristics? Or
no, I won't.
Yeah.
I won't. And I feel a lot of freedom when I do that.
Yeah.
But no, I like to be... I like to come in and be a little lost and then find it, work organically. But yeah, and I wish I feel that I can't... I'm not good at characters.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's in my head. I don't know if it's true or not.
I think it's like... It's more of a mindset. Because I don't think I do particularly good characters either. But I always like... thinking that I am a character, even if I am pretty close to myself, is for some reason, maybe just for me, but it makes me force myself to believe the reality of what's going on. It prevents me from like being detached from it in a way. It's just like, well, if I'm a character, this is just part of my world. It's not some show that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then I tend to make less like kind of like trying to please lines, you know, hopefully. You know? Like, I'm more able to just for either me to like commit to what's going on.
Do you ever have that moment when you talk about trying to please lines, where you have a line that comes in your head, and you're like, "This line is going to kill," and it comes out, and it just it lands, no response, and there's no response, which is bad enough, but you're kind of waiting for that laugh, and it doesn't come.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
I'll tell you what, I had this experience, I remember when I first went to New York, first year, I was having this experience a lot in shows, I was doing a duo show, and I felt like I had no idea about how the audience was reacting, and I would say the line, and it would get a huge laugh, and I'd find myself being totally surprised, and then, you know, the converse bad, where I'd say something, I was like, this is going to be super funny, and then nothing happened, and I found myself not having that reaction anymore, because I think I've gotten better about just being really present with what's going on, like, I find when I have that assumption about how something's going to land, it's a form of me kind of judging my offer in a weird way of like, I already had an expectation about it, and I'm kind of separating myself from it. Where it's like, now it's like, I think like, I feel more like outside of myself that way. Where it's like, it's either going to get a laugh or not, but it tends not to throw me anymore. Which I like feeling that when I'm able to feel like that in scenes, in my head, it's like a happy place for me.
We're going to take some questions from the audience.
Sure.
Either about what we just did, or questions about you guys, or the Magnet, or New York, or Angel Dust. So, if we could turn the lights on, Nick. Can you do the house lights? Great. And can you turn them up a little more? Because I can't see. This is really, for the people in the podcast, there's like 400 people here, and it's like a huge auditorium.
Yeah.
So if you could just shout out your questions, that would probably help me. Yes.
Here in Chicago, there's a lot of people that I meet that are like, they moved here to do improv, which is always kind of surprising to me, although I kind of did too. But is there people in New York that think that way? Like, they came to New York to do improv, and they're going to do that every day?
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
I live in New York because I applied to grad school, and my only five schools in New York are Chicago. Which should have been a really big clue that I didn't actually want to go to grad school, because I only wanted to go somewhere I could keep doing improv. And so I quit grad school like after a year.
What did you major in?
Psychology. So I was doing
Has that helped you at all in teaching or doing improv?
It definitely framed some of the ways I watch people react, and like ways to have associations, you know, like ideas of where ideas come from, like just knowing how kind of brain works.
Because I know directing and teaching, having some sort of understanding, the thing that's helped me the most about teaching is actually been in therapy. Like, I will approach it like not that I'm trying to heal, you know, I think there's a healing component, but just like the boundaries that a therapist uses, you know, I've found that to be really helpful. More questions.
What is your strongest, each of you's strongest part of it?
Your strongest?
What facet?
Like, what are we personally strongest at?
I have a good memory for callbacks.
So you'll remember.
I'm pretty good at remembering things and doing callbacks, or I think sometime what. I don't pat myself on the back, but I'll go out. If no one goes out, I'll jump out even if I don't have anything. I'll jump on the bomb.
Sure.
I guess, like, keeping things moving. I edit a lot for my team.
Does she do that in your relationship? Is she the editor in the relationship?
Yeah, I would say she keeps things moving, yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
Like, are you the type of person, like, oh, it takes you forever to go out, to go to dinner, and you're the one who's going, come on, come on, come on?
No.
Okay.
We both, neither of us would ever choose to go out to dinner.
Why is that?
We're always too busy.
Yeah. Oh, too busy, okay.
We're at the theater every night,
yeah.
Or rehearsals are...
Does that get a little incestuous? You work together, you live together, and I'd imagine a small apartment, and how do you balance that?
I also have a day job,
okay.
So I'm gone.
Not me, Jimmy.
So what is Lewis doing during the day?
Mostly sitting.
Do you get out and sit, or do you just go to? Or you sit in the house?
I sit in my apartment. I read a lot.
Okay.
And then I will sit and I will think about how I should be doing more with my days and my life, and then we'll sweat about all the bad decisions I make.
Lewis, thank God you don't like pot.
Yeah.
Because that would be a disaster.
Oh, I didn't say
that.
Oh,
like, no.
I just don't smoke it while I perform.
Okay.
Though I have not, I have quit pot.
Okay.
I don't smoke pot anymore.
All right.
For that reason, because I started.
Okay, assets. We're on you, Lewis.
Assets. I'm good at, I think I'm believable most of the time. I'm good at making ideas believable most of the time. I think I'm good at stepping in to add details into the background that are useful.
Rick?
I feel like I'm comfiest, like, following the fun, like, whether it's something I've created that I have a real tangible sense of, even if I can't put into words, of, like, what I love about it, and less, like, what's funny about it, more just what jazzes me, and also, like being able to translate that to my fellow players of, like, I love what they did about that, and be able to chase that down and, like, make some pattern with that. I think that's when I feel like I'm doing the best work. And it goes with the, like, inner piece, too. Like, where's the fun thing in this whole show? Where's the focus of it?
Another question.
Hey, Jimmy?
Yes?
We got time for one more question?
Is that you, Nick?
Yeah, it's me.
Okay, I thought we had a longer time tonight.
We got one more question, I'll have
to be great. Okay. Yes?
So, I read a lot about styles of improv in Chicago and in New York. And there's different terminology, an offer, an initiation. You hear about New York being so gamey, but when you're actually playing, does it really seem like there's that big of a difference? Because it didn't seem, well, when you're watching, I wouldn't have been able to pick out the New York performers versus the Chicago performers.
I've started thinking about them as stylists interested in that can be matched with, like, a set of structured forms. So it's like, I would never teach someone to do an Armando without thinking about game. Like, that structure is innately there to deconstruct a comedic premise. It's about building a game. But it's like, if you're doing a monosyllabic, like, thinking about it in terms of game, I feel like it doesn't use as much power as it's there. You know, you've got a long scene, you've got a lot of time, your power's going to lie in character.
A monosyllabic is what?
I mean, just like a single scene for however long, so for 20
one
minutes.
One scene, okay. One location.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, it's like, and I think the best performers, like, regardless of what you see, like, they're not thinking about that stuff. Like, no one's thinking, like, I got to hide in the game. Like, you watch, you know, you see these two people, guys, they're not thinking, like, have to hit the game now. They're just playing. Like,
yeah.
It's just that's the way they codify their instincts, you know. And but when you're doing it, you just would be doing it. Like, I think that's true for anyone, no matter what kind of style and how they do. When you're actually doing it, you
you're just going. You're not like trying to sift through the decision tree, you know.
You guys were on a boat with Second City.
Yes.
How was that Second City style versus what you had learned in New York?
Well, it was our first time doing short form.
Okay.
So for us, learning the games was interesting. We picked it up
pretty
quick. Yeah. So that was new for us. But otherwise, when we were doing scenes with Second City, or we were just like kind of improvising together, it didn't seem too different.
The big thing I think that I felt that was different was just we had to get stuff much quicker. And we had to keep it moving along. So I felt much less inhibited doing the games on the boat just because...
No one will see you.
No one will see you.
Right.
People are happy just to see you do it.
Okay.
So if you just launch into song immediately, people are happy that you're launching into song. It doesn't matter what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a little bit different because
Well, I mean, but performing for the ship, we had to say the suggestion almost right away because the audiences, you had to remind them that you're using their suggestion. So, I mean, that was like just like a different... I mean, we were performing for people who had never seen improv before, so we had to be very, a little bit basic. So I think that was definitely different doing it on the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to be concise.
Yeah.
Weirdest thing you saw on the boat?
The weirdest thing?
Yep.
I saw a woman throw up. And within 9 seconds, a team of guys in hazmat suits descended on it, vacuumed up the vomit, cut out the carpet, and had another piece of carpet that matched exactly to size, and sprayed it all down with chemicals, and were done within 30 seconds.
Yeah, this is while a show was going on.
While a show was going on.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing.
That's why I'd love to take a cruise. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much for
being
having us.
Megan, Lewis, and Rich.
Well, there you have it. It's another episode of Improv Nerd. I want to thank our guests, Megan, Rick, and Lewis, and I want to thank everyone at the Chicago Improv Festival. As always, I want to thank my producer, Ben Cabrero, and you for listening. If you haven't gone to our Facebook page, please, please, please like Improv Nerd. It's great for my self-esteem. And for more information on me, Jimmy Corain, and my 2012 award-winning classes and workshops, go to jimmycorain.com and check out our new website. Until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island, and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
It might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you and Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you fuck.